support for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by Nashville's Big Backyard, a nonprofit economic initiative focused on rural destinations along the fabled Natchez National Parkway.
Tom Benson, I'm the Chief Communications and Marketing Officer for the Tennessee Aquarium in beautiful downtown Chattanooga, Tennessee.
Tom, you love it here because I met you, 2011, and here you were.
You know, I moved here initially to start a career in television, and this was the first place that my wife and I lived that we were kind of thrilled that people would want to go to spend their time.
Relatives and friends.
Yeah, you know, it's great. Over time, Chattanooga has become one of those cities that I think gets better every year. There's always something new that's being added. There's new dynamics. There's new people coming into the city and starting businesses and bringing new ideas. And it's always been historically a melting pot, but I feel like even more so today. And we've got a nice infusion of young people that are starting tech companies here and doing some very exciting things. So it is a great city that's surrounded by nature, and I love getting outdoors. And so for me to be able to leave my house and 5 minutes away, I've got a choice of 3 different waterfalls from my home is, you know, pretty spectacular. Again, within 15 minutes of downtown Chattanooga, you can get to some really nice hiking trails and get off the beaten path pretty quickly. With Instagram and Facebook, we're finding more and more people are coming farther and farther to experience nature and to come see Chattanooga because they see these beautiful pictures that other people post, and it just, you know, drives the intent to visit through the roof.
Destinations in town, high on my list is the Tennessee Aquarium. In a way, it's the state of Tennessee's aquarium.
Yeah, it is a very special place, and we are very proud of the fact that we're the number one aquarium for overall guest satisfaction, and we really focus on, you know, being friendly and trying to engage our guests and point out things that are happening or new animals that are here. And we've got a very enthusiastic staff that lives and breathes that mission. You met Rose today, our new entomologist. And
butterfly lady.
Yeah, she's very much that way to, you know, let me tell you about these butterflies that I care for and why I love them and why you should too. And our best days, Tom, really are the days when we see a Yelp or TripAdvisor review and people say, I brought my family to the Tennessee Aquarium to have a good time, but wow, we really learned a lot. And that's gratifying for all of us here.
Well, your educational maestros obviously got it, because walking through today, the kids are just 100% dialed in.
And you know, today's kids aren't out in nature as much as they used to be. And so for many children who live most of their lives in an urban environment, they are making connections with nature in a meaningful way, perhaps for the first time here at the aquarium, but that sparks curiosity and a desire to get out into nature more. And so we feel like the role of zoos and aquariums is more important today than ever before to establish that first connection with nature and get kids excited about the wildlife that live all around us.
On one level, you show and showcase species from around the world, and then you also showcase local regional species.
Yeah, we're able to take people beneath the surface of the water, because here in our rivers, lakes, and streams lives a lot of biodiversity that's hidden. You know, if we had all of these colorful freshwater fishes running around on land like they do in the plains of the Serengeti, you know, we would have travelers from all over the world eating a path to Chattanooga to see the wildlife and to see these animals. But the salamanders, the turtles, the mussels, the freshwater fishes are colorful and interesting as anything anywhere else in the world. It's just that they live underwater, and so they're out of sight and to some degree out of mind. And so what we're trying to do is just showcase this underwater rainforest that surrounds us here in the southeast, get people to appreciate these animals for their role in the environment, and then maybe walk away with an appreciation that takes you to the next level. Like, what can I do to protect the water that they live in? Because we're focused on freshwater, which is our most important resource. It's our playground here in Chattanooga, but it's also our source of drinking water. So again, if we're taking care of the water, we're taking care of it for ourselves, but also these incredible animals that live around us.
So you have specific areas that deal and address with plastics and with waste. Do you watch and see the engagement of kids that are learning as they're here?
Yeah, we just opened a new exhibit, Nobody Trashes Tennessee, in partnership with the Tennessee Department of Transportation, focused on roadside litter. And it's fun because we created these plastic vortices, these plastic tornadoes. Kids can wave their hand over the sensor and the water spins and these particles create this tornado. And while the kids are playing with that, the parents are really watching the videos and reading the messages that are around that. And again, it's sort of a, let's do it in a fun way and not be preachy about messages, but just encourage people to join us. And plastics is one of those things that I really do believe we can encourage people to join us and make the world a better place and not put people out of their comfort zone. A lot of these single-use plastics, we've got alternatives for, and we can do more recycling, but the key really is to move away from as many plastics as we can.
Are you observing any learning curve taking place in real time?
We are, and I think that, again, there's a generation of kids that are connected and are sharing these stories about what they learn, and they're also very invested in being good citizens, whether that's...
You're getting little stewards and ambassadors.
Yeah, I think so. I think that these youngsters, and I say youngsters, but you know, they're anywhere from my granddaughter's age all the way up through their 30s and 40s, but they have grown up in a world where they are connected to each other digitally, maybe disconnected from nature, but they all want to be involved and participate in a way in making the world a better place, whether that's socially or environmentally. I think that they are concerned citizens. I'm encouraged by that because sometimes the environmental news can get so heavy that people shut down and they tune it out. But when you see young people getting excited and saying, tell me more, how can I get involved? How can I do something to make it better? That's our challenge, is just to try to provide some additional information and some resources and say, you want to learn more? We've got some on our website, or here's some other environmental partners that are doing some great work, and you might be interested in their work as well.
At the Tennessee Aquarium, let's say you and I had an hour. That was your window to show me what you have here. What's your number one and two? Where would you take me?
I would ask you, what are you interested in? Because we have people that are fanatical about turtles, and we have more turtles here than any other zoo or aquarium in North America, and we're very proud of that fact because turtles are so adaptable. Other people like marine invertebrates, so I'd take you to the cuttlefish or the octopus or, you know, seahorses, and, you know, try to showcase those saltwater creatures. Some are really interested in mammals, so otters or lemurs might be the first place I take you.
You have a specific exhibit that focuses on the Tennessee River.
We do, yeah. In fact, it is the Tennessee River exhibit. And so if the water behind the aquarium was as crystal clear as that exhibit, you would see lake sturgeon that we've been working with our partners to restore in the Tennessee River. You'd see paddlefish and gar and bass and bluegill and all of these wonderful animals.
Is it an epiphanous experience for local kids that know the Tennessee River but don't know what's inside?
I think it is in several ways. One, they get a chance to see some of the fish that live in their backyard. And we just launched a new website called FIN, Freshwater Information Network, through the Tennessee Aquarium Conservation Institute. And it has records of all of the freshwater fishes that live in the southeast. And so it's great for teachers because they can say, okay, here's a creek that runs right behind our school. Let's take a look at FIN, the Freshwater Information Network, and see which fish live in there, and let's learn a little bit more about them. And they go out and study the streams that are right there in their school's backyard. So that could be in Chatsworth, Georgia, or Murphy, North Carolina, or Huntsville, Alabama, or Nashville, Tennessee. It's great to have this visual reference point here at the aquarium, but then a digital reference point online.
Do you have any remote learning that you've been doing?
We do. You know, the pandemic really caused us to think about the aquarium experience in new ways. In fact, our mantra, when we first closed the aquarium due to the pandemic, we were closed for 96 days, and during that time, we were trying to drive a digital audience online. So we added more live web cameras, we added more educational resources, because a lot of parents were teachers for the first time in their lives and they needed help with these science lessons. So what could we do to provide resources? And now we've expanded our video library for teachers, free to any teacher in the country, freshwater lessons that are based on the science standards. We have virtual science lessons, so you can register your class to have a one-on-one with one of our educators and some of our animals. So there's a lot of opportunities there. And even with media, we've been able to connect with TV stations across the country. And I can't take penguins to a TV station in Birmingham, but I can invite the Birmingham TV station inside our penguin exhibit through Zoom and have a really engaging conversation with one of our experts while the penguins are waddling around them. So there have been some bright spots, although not many, to the way the pandemic changed our lives.
Looking forward, are there certain models that you're going to keep?
So the time ticketing has really been beneficial in a couple of different ways. Time ticketing limits the number of people in our buildings at any one time.
Space out the distancing.
Adequate spacing within our buildings, and people really appreciate that.
It's so working.
Time tickets are working. And I think that, you know, the way that we connect with people over large distances will only increase in the future. We will still try to find ways to provide content to homeschool parents or teachers that are in classrooms that may not have the financial resources to take a trip to the aquarium. But how can we serve them and provide educational resources to help them in their pursuits?
To learn more about your world, Tennessee Aquarium, where would you direct somebody?
TennesseeAquarium.com, but our Facebook page has a lot of resources. We try to keep that updated. We also have a Facebook page for our Conservation Institute, so you can see what our scientists are doing in the field. We've got some folks this week that are out collecting bridal darters, and they've been out Conasauga log perch, tangerine darters, and also we just released some lake sturgeon last week. We had a Facebook Live event for that.
Instagram.
Yeah, absolutely. The visual storytelling is something that's really important, and it helps people appreciate and understand the creatures that live in our world.
Tom, if somebody wanted to learn more about your world, where would you first direct them?
Yep, go to TennesseeAquarium.com or check us out on Facebook. And my name is Tom Benson. I'm at the Tennessee Aquarium. I'm the Chief Communications and Marketing Officer.
Thanks again, Tom. And I'm Tom Wilmer, reporting from Tennessee. We'll see you here. So where are we? This is pretty cool.
Yes, we're at Chattanooga Whiskey Experimental Distillery.
Mad scientists of whiskey come here and experiment?
Basically, yeah. Anything our distillers want to kind of play around with, we're really the playground for. We are one of, if not the only, experimental distilleries standalone where that's all we do. So,
So it's one company, one label, one brand?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
But yet you have multiple distillers.
Yes, we have a whole team of distillers, all under our head distiller, Grant, but they all have their own talents that they bring to the table, and they're all like special in their own little way. So. Mm-hmm.
And you're talking about a female distiller that was really cool.
Yeah, Tiana, she's honestly the coolest person I've ever met, but her mind is awesome. She comes up with, from the gin to the Amaros that we do, with its 13 botanicals, her knowledge is everlasting, so.
That's fascinating. Mm-hmm. So it must be really fascinating for you to watch people like that at work and seeing their magic happen.
Oh, totally. It's really inspiring, especially from a drinker's perspective, to see all the things she can come up with. And I'm like, yeah, that tastes good.
So talk to us about Tennessee whiskey, number one, and what it has to be legally Tennessee whiskey.
Yeah, so technically Tennessee whiskey has to, one, be made in Tennessee, but it also has to be pushed through a charcoal maple filter system. Technically, we don't do that here, but we do have our own style, which is Tennessee High Malt, which features a lot of malted grain along with our corn.
The difference between bourbon and whiskey, because it's not dramatic, right?
Yeah, so whiskey is our umbrella term. It covers a lot of different barrel-aged spirits, but bourbon specifically, being America's national spirit, has to be made here, but there's barrel requirements, grain requirements, aging, so it's pretty regulated.
And what are the key things to make it legally a bourbon?
Yeah, so besides being in America, you do have to be in a brand new charred oak barrel. It doesn't have to be American oak, just any oak.
Brand new.
Right, always brand new, never reused. And then the corn, your recipe has to be at least 51% corn, so mostly corn.
In American corn.
In American corn. We also have an aging requirement. For a straight bourbon, it has to be at least 2.5 years. Normally for just bourbons, it's that 2-year mark.
In your distillery here, and your label is called?
So our label, on our label, is Chattanooga Whiskey Company, but we have our 91 and 111. We have so much cool stuff.
But it's all under the Chattanooga label?
Yes, sir. Chattanooga Whiskey Company.
And distribution, is it all retail walk-in, or do you distribute around the region?
Yeah, so we do have our 91 and our 111, our two flagships, are distributed in about 16 states.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we're about far west as Colorado and as far north, I believe, as D.C., so.
And I bet you have people that come to town on business or whatever that take it back to Europe or Japan.
We've definitely made it. We've seen on our social media people taking it home or taking it hiking up on a huge mountain and having a little swig. And it's awesome to see people share that with us.
How many barrels do you do typically in a year?
Yeah, we do one a week here. So anywhere of like max 52.
Mm-hmm. And other manufacturing, other distillation with under the umbrella?
Right, yeah. Over there we do 6 to 8 barrels a day.
Wow.
So our work week, usually we're making whiskey, you know, Monday to Friday, give the distillers the weekend off. So, but yeah.
And is there even a, you know, with your own personal bias, a flagship whiskey that is symbolic of the Chattanooga distillery?
Oh, yeah. Our 111 definitely kind of represents us as a company. It's high proof. It's in your face. It's not going away, but it's so much flavor packed in there, too.
What is the flavor profile that you experience?
Yeah, so personally, I get a lot of cherry and kind of dark chocolate off of it. I like sipping the 111 during those cold times. It really warms you up. It's the perfect just sipping by itself whiskey.
And it's very drinkable, smooth.
Oh, yeah.
So
you could have
a neat.
Oh, yeah, you can have a neat the whole bottle.
Yeah, but you like everything neat, right?
Mm-hmm, you already know.
Then how about your silver? I like that type of whiskey. Just real frontier, you know.
Yeah, right in your face. It's really showing you the showcase of the grains themselves with no barrel influence. With those malted grains in there, you do taste the corn, but there's this whole sweetness profile that I don't think has been present in any other white whiskey I've had.
So you grew up in Gatlinburg, so you grew up with a couple of Cheyenne guys in your family.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Been around Cheyenne and white whiskey forever, so I've definitely had my share.
Do you like Cheyenne?
It's there. It's definitely a little, you know, acquired taste. I'm not going to sip on it, necessarily.
Sure.
Yeah. But it's easy to shoot back to me, at least, at this point.
And do a lot of people mix whiskey with other things, or most people just a little bit of water, a little bit of ice?
We do get a lot of bourbon heads in here, and you know, they know how to do it, they know what they like. But for those who don't, we do have some stuff that does mix well. So the 111,
what would you recommend for
somebody? The 111 I like just by itself, but the 91, our other flagship, is great for cocktails, whether it's whiskey sour, like any Manhattan, old fashioned, or just a little bit of Coke.
And your grains, talk to us about that.
We do a lot of malted grains, which are present in beer. So after fermenting, it does kind of look like you're making beer. But it has a whole array of different flavors you can choose from. And we have basically a whole playing ground. Not a lot of other distilleries are exploring the world of malted grains. So
you can really tweak the flavor profile by the grain you choose.
Definitely, and even the malt you use. Rye is one of those things that I normally don't love, but when it does get malted, the sweet and spicy really just makes it for me.
And how about yeast? I know some wine producers that like to modify and change and tweak the profile through a specific yeast. And I know the brewer over in Hot Springs, Arkansas, she loves playing around with different yeast to get a different flavor characteristics. Do you see the distillers doing that?
Oh yeah, they're constantly experimenting with literally any step that they can. We've done champagne yeast before, and that is, it literally tastes like there should be bubbles in it. It's awesome.
Wow. So you can have a lot of fun. Flavor fun.
Right? Yeah, totally. It's really, that's what you can kind of choose.
Talk to us about the array of your price point of your different products retail that somebody could buy here.
I mean we do have some that are like our single barrels. Obviously, quantity wise, since they're so small batch, they're going to reflect a little more. Those are usually the priciest we get. That one's right now sitting at around 80 before tax, and then our 91 I believe is like $30. Our silver's the cheapest, which is like $27, but
good deal, huh?
Right, we're almost one of the best ones.
I know. That was my temptation.
Right? I know.
So do you have groupies? Do you have people that are obsessively following you and showing up regular.
Oh yeah, for some experimentals we'll have lines out the door. There's a gentleman who comes up from Texas just to get our experimentals, and not that they go anywhere, they don't leave this building, but he says, you know, price of gas is worth it to come get it, so.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
And you put the word out on social media?
Honestly, our newsletter is the first to know about everything, our email. But then right after that, our Instagram is where it's going to come out.
You go Facebook too?
Yep, Facebook, Instagram, and then Twitter. I think we might have a Twitter.
Uh-huh. And how would somebody follow you on social media?
We're Chattanooga Whiskey at everything, or Chat Whiskey. You can just give us a good look up, and I promise you'll find it. My name is Trinity. I am a tour guide here at Chattanooga Distillery. Yeah.
And a connoisseur.
And a connoisseur.
I love it. Well, thank you for sharing. This has been great.
Of course. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome. I'm your host, Tom Wilmer, reporting from Chattanooga. We'll see you here.
Support for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by Nashville's Big Backyard, a nonprofit economic initiative focused on rural destinations along the fabled Natchez National Parkway. With a focus on rural communities, such as Leaper's Fork, not far from Nashville, the Big Backyard journey traverses through Tennessee's southwest quarter down into Alabama's legendary Shoals region, the mothership of American music. The featured rural community's common thread is historic architecture and a timeless, charming small-town atmosphere, some with a river running through it. The diverse attractions of the featured communities include the amazing Elephant Sanctuary in Hohenwald, where retired circus elephants come to retire in peace, and iconic destinations like Northern Alabama's Shoals region, where you'll find one of America's most iconic Frank Lloyd Wright homes and two of America's legendary recording studios that have been etching American soundtracks since the early 1960s. For example, Muscle Shoals Sound Studios in Sheffield, Alabama, opened in 1969, instantly started marking up the charts with number one hits by recording artists like the Rolling Stones, Willie Nelson, Wilson Pickett, Linda Ronstadt, Rod Stewart, and Paul Simon. Nashville's Big Backyard's ardent promoters include Mike Wolf, host of History Channel's American Pickers TV series, who provides a surgical contextual lens focused on Nashville's Big Backyard's diverse initiatives, and Liz McLaurin, president of the Land Trust for Tennessee, an equally passionate supporter of Nashville's Big Backyard's greater good elements through the Land Trust Preservation Initiatives. To learn more about the program, log on to nashvillesbigbackyard.org.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
My name is Roseanne Cash. I listen to WNYC in New York. And in fact, NPR is all I listen to. And if I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So yes, please support your local NPR station.